All right, we're starting my favorite part of the evening. All right, thanks, Joan. Joan helps me. Yeah, Joan. Let's hear. We have here for Dawn. Joan here. These guys are just really good people. Let's hear some for these guys. They always help me every week. Daryl Jennifer. She puts that all together. New people. Okay. I don't know. It looks like Jen Ashburn.
Jen Ashburn.
Jenny, all right, Jen.
So I have one poem I'd like to read. My father hates hippies and drinks too much, and when those things tumble together, he talks of his life in the black and white photos where he's a young man holding a rooster or driving a tractor, or the color Polaroids where he wears olive drab and holds an M14 but still has the pale skin of a teenager. I have to remind myself the man in the photos is my father. He also hates LBJ even more than hippies and carries a thorn-covered club for the man who escalated the war. So in a way, he agrees with the hippies and will admit this if in the right mood. On an evening of Canadian mist and Hank Williams Sr., of purple sunset off the back porch, of truth or the closest we can get exhaled in a puff of cigarette smoke. But those free-loving, pot-smoking hippies are bastards more interested in fucking than anything else, especially the bone-draining work that supports a family. These are my words I place in my father's mouth now, and I think they're as true as the photos of him shirtless on a tarmac in Phu Loi, Vietnam. Ask my father about the war, and he will tell you he was lucky, and he was, a UH-1 Huey mechanic and only occasional door gunner. Did you ever kill anyone, we asked as children, and he answered, I don't think so. Thank you.
Thank you, Jen. Jason Irwin.
I have this weird habit of picking my fingers, so this is called self-mutilation number one. My work is quiet, delicate like a surgeon's or a bird's. Picking flesh from fingers, nails, cuticles, thin as scripture. They peel away in oily layers like fruit, flowering into blood. I imagine I know how God must feel, torturing us from the safety of heaven's high balcony. Maybe it gives him the illusion of control, a sense of purpose. Maybe he even flushes, losing himself in moments of ecstasy. Thanks.
Oh, wow, okay. Ah, that's a looking Ron. Ronnie something or other. Ron, help me out, John. Oh, there you are. Come on.
Ron? Ron.
Ron Steiner?
Steiner.
Okay, there we go.
American beer and American bongs. A charcoal hero swings a lighter and still motion from home to here. All dates are one now. Look back a month, a year, a decade. With no facts, a sweet time of relax. Church bells humming on a Sunday morning, a guitar in the background. Does anyone go out into the night anymore? I want to throw into the lake this book, like grasshoppers dirty on the ground, black and yellow in the midair. I want to throw numbers into the lake. 1, 2, 3, 4. Already gone with the birds, picking worms in the damp grass. Arthur's camp is back in town. Friars and nymphs gather about the field, a memorial to the Middle Ages, minus the plague and death, but not clap and crabs. Thank you. Thank you. All right, cool. This is called Departing Misfits. Blue hair he had once in a long time suit jacket, sunglasses, and a high-frequency microphone for graduates. For dropouts, easy love, and 12 simple steps, only a hurdle to skip to reach another goal, a more refined grain of skin tone. Like ending a song, a blues riff, a turnaround and say goodbye with a warm hug to someone you love, though denial fits easier in the shoe than getting blisters. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That's because I messed your name up and I didn't get to it. You know. Sorry about that. There's the rules, so you guys know. You can read two poems or one long opus. As long as, I don't know what's relevant, is it? You know? Joan will let you know. David Diaz, let's go.
Two short ones. Wayward Arrows. To hear, at last, those three words spoken, my heart's obsession, open, unmasked, from lips other than the lips I covet, the arrow, damn it, shot by another, to feel dismay and not elation, my heart's deflation, and yet to say, so gently, with great regret, the love's not met, forgive me, their arrow missed its mark, in this dark we'll stay unkissed, both of us nursing grievances, sad utterances, quietly, without fuss. Staring at an unblinking eye, the heart breaks and keeps breaking, asking itself if there is any limit, wondering what more it might take to reach it and what will happen then. Wave after wave curling into the deserted shore and crashing, spent, before seeping back into the great heaving ocean of itself to gather into another wave and another, because that is all the heart knows, how it loves, how it weeps.
Stuart Shepherd.
I've got a John Shulman story, a true story. Several years ago when my novel came out, I went over to Caliban and I told John, and I gave him a copy, and a week later I asked him what he thought, and he said, I really, really like the typeface that you chose. Here's a poem. Never know which side to read on. I'm afraid of showing my political inclination here. This is called Procrastination. It's been a week. and I haven't eaten much. Mostly liquids, it seems. But finally, I force myself to drive out to the place where I could pick you up and sat you gently beside me. Then drove around all day in the hot sun, doing errands, worried the entire time about the car overheating and, foolishly, you overheating. Later, in the supermarket parking lot, I finally uncovered you with all the shoppers going by, carrying their important bags of tomatoes, beer, and chicken, while I sat there, cradling what must have looked like a bag of dust in my hands. Thank you.
Christina Ayler, like Sailor. Where you at, Christina Ayler?
Yeah, right.
Christina Ayler, like Sailor, all right.
A lot of people get my last name wrong. These poems are based on real relationships that I've had. To the cerebral drama that will probably be canceled after its brilliant first season. Maybe I am not quite at your level, but I want to reach as far as I can grasp. With the tips of my fingers, that intersection of obsessions, climb up and devour you again and again. I want a shared presence to own you, run my hand up and down your spine, listen to an incisive quip, or languish in the bravery of silence. I will write fervent, effusive online reviews. I will read every article, listen to every podcast, seek out any extracurricular connection to you. Complications expand. It takes longer to walk friends through each beat, explain your worth, defend each layer. Neither of us wants an ending. There comes a magnet flip moment, a repelling force that skews our eye contact till the strain makes us blink. When I drop in, I tell myself it was perfect, that I got just enough. Then seeing you is too painful. My visits dwindle. Your replacement isn't as good, but I can talk to my parents about this one. To the sitcom I'm still watching 8 seasons in. I deserve better than this. I have heard you recount this narrative in so many iterations, bruises form on my eardrums as you drop each familiar beat. I get that the jar top was really stuck. You mixed up your note cards. You should never have taken that last shot. Why do I listen? When you don't even bother to turn your head toward me, consider what I might want, need from you. I want to rage, explain all of your inadequacies in scrupulous detail. What was insightful is now opaque. The little winks turn to a refried pop culture reference. You say you hadn't noticed. An animatronic doll with dying batteries, my hugs activate your patter. Your comments more remote, more rote with every squeeze. A memory of pleasure has me lying on top of you, still embracing until my arms grow numb. If I found the combination of punctuation marks that evoked an eye roll, I would tweet it at you. Don't trouble yourself pandering. I turn on my back, tick away the seconds until your disappointing conclusion, counting the back of each tooth with my tongue. I'll wake exhausted just for the time it takes to push you off. Thank you.
Hey, I like you. You know that? And I liked how you skipped past me. That was really cool. Well, I wish I could. That was cool. Thumbs up to you, man. Okay. My sidekick, Joan Barr. Come on up here.
This is sort of an answer to a couple of things that people had read. And also, Jimmy's always reading some really interesting poems about his years in the 70s. And, of course, he served in Vietnam. And I grew up in L.A., which was very different than growing up here. And I grew up in a family in which a lot of people knew show business and did it. And so I'm going to make one cultural reference. Imogene Coca. Imogene Coca, the great comedian, show of shows with Sid Caesar. 1,000 Pigeons. Robbie and Paul and I met Carlin at the Hamburger Hamlet in Westwood in 1970. Carlin had a big laugh and shiny hair, but behind the jokes, a serious guy, he promised he'd go on the Tonight Show and talk about the Vietnam War, but every time Carson would cut him off, Carson had radar. That year we spoke in churches, temples, high schools, even the Rotary. I remember this dwarby guy at a Kiwanis breakfast who shouted, "We're doing a hell of a job in Vietnam, a hell of a job." None of this was supposed to be funny, but it was. Robbie was like a Jewish Red Skelton in Pauly. Was so Phil Silvers from Bilko that some days I felt like Imogene Coca in bell bottoms, peace sign on forehead, brown hair past my waist. But Paul is dead, 20 years, and Robbie's wife has cancer. We're having lunch at Jerry's Deli. Robbie reminds me of the laughs they had, timing me, doing my klutzy flap-doodle moves, setting up that flimsy card table on Bruin Walk. Why'd I let them do that? I was the one who'd drive each month to collect $100 for the phone from Mr. W., a sweetheart of an old lefty who made B-movies and had an office in Hollywood and Vine. When the daughter of Mr. W.'s old friend, Art Linkletter, took acid and jumped out a window, Mr. W. wanted us to stop yakking about the war and talk about the danger of drugs instead, and maybe we should have. Robbie says, "You know, you really screwed up," and reminds me how I didn't call him when Paul died. "I could have killed you." Then he shrugs, half laughing, and shouts, "1,000 pigeons should shit on your head for what you've done."
Did we forget anybody tonight?
Jimmy.
I'm going to finish it up then. I want you to know that I believe, if there's any Christians in this room, because I don't want to offend anybody. Yeah, no, really, I don't. I was brought up Catholic. I believe in all that stuff. I really do. I don't believe in confession, though, because I couldn't tell the truth in there.
You don't believe in confession?
No, I don't, because I'd have to lie. Anyway. Shit. But I honestly do. I talk to God, and I wrote a series of God poems. I mean, many, many, many God poems. And I talk to God usually at 3 in the morning. And I rewrote the Gospel of John because I didn't like it when it was first written. But anyway, this is my conversation with God. And I have these long titles. All right, this is the title. And I'm not going to read your whole poem anyway. No, I'm not. It's too fucking long. Thinking nobody wants to jump from a skyscraper and wars last a long time. And leopards can't dance at bar mitzvahs. And I can't sleep while pondering what Jesus' middle name. And all the while I'm talking with God. That's the title. I guess that's what's wrong today, is that nobody is a jumper. Nobody wants to climb out the 60th story window and then threatens to jump, or just jumps, thus ending it all. But here's the rub. I'll just skip on this number. And I'm hearing... And here I'm in. All right. My balls just got busted. Okay. And nobody wants... Oh, here we go. Then we're rolling. And nobody wants to be somebody by taking everybody with them. Instead of just doing the honorable thing by jumping alone, they all want to go into the classroom and shoot 8-year-old boys and girls, maybe because they're afraid of heights, or maybe a voice inside their head told them, go ahead and buy an assault rifle and kill innocent people. And I'm here in Pittsburgh, and it's 2 o'clock in the morning, the third day of summer, and we've been at war with Iraq for over 13 years, and if I stand far enough downwind, I can smell the Cheney stench of burning oil or hear the rumbling of frackers, and God, I'm tired and unable to sleep thinking of divine continence, like maybe nothing will change if I stare for a long time into the sun. And what is this all about, God? An experiment? Maybe I was put here to guess the weight of the dead? Maybe I was put here to find humor in the Bible? And if Jesus H. Christ was your son, what does the H stand for? Jesus Henry Christ? Jesus Heathcliff? Honcho Christ? Hubert? Holy Head? Hobo? Hosa? Horse Face? Hurricane Happy? Harry Carey? Hotsy Totsy? Hiccup? Hanky Panky? Hustler? Hard Boil? Hardcore? Hat Trick? Jesus Herbie Christ? Haggle? Hacksaw? Jesus Harlem? Howie? Homie? Heine Christ? Huey? Horatio? Hogs? Hoodwinkle? Hullabaloo? Jesus Hammer Christ? I'm leaning toward Jesus Hambone Christ. And all his friends called him Ham, his nickname Ham. But Hambone just doesn't sound Jewish. Maybe Jesus Hosanna Christ. But I'll tell you, my first pick would be Hambone. I guess, God, there are too many that carry the Bible, and few ever think that your son Hambone ever laughed or tickled a kid or told any of the apostles to pull his finger. I don't think that anyone that carries the Bible ever heard Jesus giggle when somebody mentioned Johnny the Baptist smelled like the Jordan, or he didn't snicker when he saw a leper dancing at the bar mitzvah. And how he belly laughed when Peter couldn't swim, when Peter tried to walk on water and him let him bob up and down till the count of 3. Peter looked like a drowning man teetering with a surprised look between heaven and hell. And how, when giving the Sermon on the Mount, he contemplated doing the whole sermon in Pig Latin. And how he miscalculated on the loaves and fishes and was short 500 buns. And forgot the tartar sauce, and everybody complained about how a wandering Jew kosher wine would have been great to wash the fish down, but nobody eats fish without wine, and maybe a dish of figs would have been a nice touch. And how Judas thought they should open a shoe store and franchise them in Jerusalem, and at that precise moment in time, he thought of turning the multitude into 5,000 pairs of stinky tennis shoes. Just imagine the look of Sid's face, imagine the shocked look on Sid's face when he saw Esther getting changed into a pair of sneakers. You see, God, it's late tonight and I can't sleep, and I'm sad thinking of wars that never end. And I keep thinking of all those that feel entitled and instant gratification and don't know how to come in second or last, and all those that have forgotten how to laugh at themselves, and all those that have forgotten the importance of laughter, and just saying thank you or I'm sorry, and really mean it. And if the decision is to leap from a skyscraper, You should just climb out on the edge, pull down your pants, do a little slap-ass jiggle, throw some colored confetti to check the wind direction, also to cushion the jump, maybe strap on an accordion, and on the way down play "I Don't Want Her, You Can Have Her, She's Too Fat for Me," and carry a pair of cymbals to crash the ending with a great splat. With a little luck, you can land on a fat congressman that's eating a three-scoop ice cream cone, and later everyone can catch it all on the internet. And before the day's end, it will go viral, and you will become famous. But in truth, you will be just one less friend to be bold on Facebook. But God, I'm going back to sleep and dream. And besides, you know what? I'm always thinking, and tomorrow is another day, and my master plan is to stare long into the sun and come to terms with the unassuming continence of how a leopard just falls to pieces while soft-shoeing to an old Patsy Cline song. And Jesus H. Christ, if this ain't an awful joke, just pull his finger. See ya. All right, man. I'll see you next week. Thank all of you.